afternoon. I'm DeCarlin Seawitt, City Manager for the City of Columbia. With me is Matthew Liu, Director of Finance. Thank you for joining us today. Each year, we present and discuss the city's priorities for the upcoming fiscal year. In the past, we've done that in the form of a speech. Now, me standing at the podium, looking at electrons, speaking out at the audience. We decided to do something a little different. So we're gonna invite department directors up to have a panel-style discussion. We've identified commonly asked questions based on communications that we've heard from community members. My hope is that each one of you can walk away understanding our budget process and our priorities. So with the city's budget, we have several priorities, but we want to highlight a few. So those will be infrastructure, public safety, housing, and social services. By funding these priorities, we support the goals outlined in our strategic plan, and we support the city's vision of being the best place for everyone to live, work, learn, and play. So before we talk about the budget numbers, we want to talk about our budget process. So how does it start? Well, it starts with you, our citizens. We take input from our residents in several ways: public input meetings, online engagement, and citizen surveys. Then department heads and city leadership also determine priorities based on demand and need, or new initiatives and programs we'd like to start. And of course, we work to maintain the service residents have come to expect. Because we're a service agency, that starts with our employees. We review what it takes to have an efficient workforce and to maintain the service that residents deserve. In last year's budget, we made significant increases to our salaries, which will carry through into this fiscal year and into the future. So let's dive into the budget. Matthew, what is the city's total annual proposed budget?
So the proposed budget for fiscal year 25 is approximately $558 million. This is a $12 million increase, or 2% from 2024. The revenues are projected around $532 million, and that's up about $26 million from 2024. The general fund budget is around $133 million. And that is an increase of around $2 million, so a slighter increase for the general fund.
Okay, so the city funds projects in several different ways. And we always have questions about, can we use funding from one area to pay for projects in another? Matthew, can you talk about our funds and any restrictions that may be placed on them?
So the city has several different funds. We have the general fund, enterprise funds, or business type activities, internal revenue funds, special revenue funds, and then we have a debt fund as well. Most of these funds have restrictions on the revenue that is generated within them. For example, enterprise funds can only use the money that they earned providing their services, while special revenue funds account for voter approved or specific uses. One example of a special revenue fund would be parks and recreation and the park sales tax. And then a good example of an enterprise fund would be water and light.
Okay, so like for our parks and rec fund, so those funds can only go to support park activity.
That's correct.
So earlier when you mentioned the revenues at $558 million and expenditures at $532 million, it appears that our expenditures are exceeding our revenues. Can you talk about that, or give us kind of what's going on with that?
So annually, the city sets aside funding for CIP projects, and capital projects in general are projects that take longer than a year to happen. And so these funds are appropriated in the current year, and then they're expended in the years following. So you'll have a little bit of the expenditure in this year, but the years following, you'll finish out the spending for those projects. And so this is the reason in most fiscal years you see expenditures exceeding revenues.
So those are usually our capital projects that's kind of moving forward.
That's
throughout
correct.
The process. All right, thank you. So Matthew, there's also always questions about city reserves. Please explain the process for reserves and how the city may utilize those reserves.
Yeah. So the city's policy is that 20% of the expenses for the current year are set aside for a reserve balance. This provides us with about 3 months of coverage in case of some sort of natural disaster or unplanned capital needs, such as the replacement of a failing city-owned bridge or something of that nature. We also have a plan that if those funds do fall below that 20% mark, that we'll replenish those funds within 3 years. We have not had to do that, luckily. But if that was to happen, we do have a way to rectify that.
All right, thank you. And people ask about grants as well. So we know a lot of services can be provided by grants, and the city pursues multiple grant opportunities. Can you tell us how much grant funding is in this proposed budget and how it would be utilized?
So currently we have about 50 grants, 50 or so grants that have been awarded to the city, around $58 million. The city receives grant funding from the Fed, from the state, from the county, and these grant funds are used for streets, the health department, public safety, and transportation projects.
Okay, so let's talk about some budget stressors. So when we focus on revenues versus expenditures, while we've seen revenues grow annually, our expenditures have exceeded our revenues growth. So can you talk to us about that budget stressor and what does that mean for us?
Yeah. So over the past few years, we've seen our revenue grow at around 2.5% per year. Normally, revenue grows with the rate of the city or the residential growth, and that's usually around 1 to 1.5%. And so we have seen a better than average increase in our revenue, but our expenses are increasing at an even higher pace. We're looking at around 8% increase on expenses. And so that's an issue that we have to keep an eye on, and this can become a problem as the city continues to grow and add additional services. We only have so many resources to fund our expenditures, so in the future we may need to explore ways to increase our current revenue sources or additional revenue sources.
Okay, so do we know what's actually causing this increase in our expenditures?
So we made some changes in 24 to employee pay to make us more competitive, and the overall inflation rate, though, that is the main cause of our issues is inflation. We've seen prices for fleet and some services double in some cases, and it has become a real issue for us.
Thank you, sir. So as we look at our revenues, are there any proposed changes in this current proposal?
Yes. So for fiscal year 25, we're looking at doing a water utility rate increase for residential and commercial customers. And this is for the utility to be able to maintain current services and meet our debt requirements. If these rates are approved, they will go into effect October 1. There's also a few planned increases for rec services and the Housing and Neighborhood Services Department, but we'll get into that more on Monday as we dive into the budget.
That's right. We have to remind people that there will be a budget work session on Monday, July 29th at 2:30.
That's correct.
Thank you. So we've outlined the budget, so let's discuss some of our priorities for fiscal year 2025. As I stated earlier, the highlights that we're looking at are infrastructure, public safety, housing, and social services. And so we know that a city with reliable infrastructure is important for a thriving community. At last city council meeting, the city held a public hearing for capital improvement projects. I believe in fiscal year 25, we're proposing a budget of $46 million for approximately 80 proposed capital improvement projects. Matthew, can you give us an overview of some of those major projects?
So a few of the major projects we're looking at doing in 25, one is a continuation of the airport terminal project. We have the MKT bridge maintenance projects in Parks and Rec. We have the Clear Creek sewer rehabilitation project. And then we have the funding for the Forum Boulevard project, which will wrap up the previous capital improvement sales tax.
Okay, so that's one of the final projects for the 2015 capital improvement sales tax.
That's correct.
All right, thank you, sir. Also critically important to a thriving community is attainable housing. I would like to ask Housing and Neighborhood Services Director Rebecca Thompson to join us. So the Housing and Neighborhood Services Department was a new initiative in fiscal year 24. Rebecca, can you tell us a little bit about the focus of this new department?
Yeah, so like you mentioned, the department was created with the fiscal year 2024 budget in order to increase access to safe and attainable housing in the community. The department combined two existing divisions within the city, the Division of Neighborhood Services, which handles all of the city's residential code enforcement and then also administers the city's rental unit conservation law, and then the Housing Programs Division, which administers and allocates all of the federal funding that the city receives through the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, for low to moderate income individuals in the community. And so the focus of this department is really to build on and use these two divisions in order to create a more focused commitment to increasing access to housing in the community. This effort is going to have to include rehabbing and preserving the city's existing affordable housing stock. It's also going to have to include increased investment in and incentivizing the production of new affordable housing. And finally, it's going to include really evaluating our internal affordable housing programs and making sure that we are, you know, bolstering those to make housing more accessible.
Okay, so access to housing is clearly an important issue for members of the City of Columbia. Tell us how your department has been working to address access to housing.
Yeah, it is a issue that impacts all of our residents. Our first priority as a department has been to really look at our existing funding that's already dedicated to housing initiatives and make sure that that's being spent and administered efficiently and that we're working with our community partners and collaborating with them to do that effectively. A significant portion of the federal grant money that the city receives is allocated by a department for housing initiatives. This grant money kind of comes in one of two general ways. One way is annual formula-based allocations that the city receives through the Department of Housing and Urban Development through their Community Development Block Grant Program, or CDBG, and our Home Investment Partnership Program, or HOME. And then the other main way is like one-time grant initiatives that are either received through an application process or through programs like the American Rescue Plan Act. And so regarding the annual allocations that we receive from HUD on a formula basis, we typically get about $1.5 million each year. Some of the projects that have been funded by that HUD grant money include Columbia Housing Authority's Park Avenue project for the rehabilitation and construction of 79 new affordable housing units. It includes allocations to Woodhaven to renovate residential properties for low-income individuals with disabilities. It also includes allocations to Services for Independent Living to make accessibility improvements to homes. Columbia Housing Authority's Kenny Point project, which is going to be 34 new affordable housing units, and they're actually having their groundbreaking ceremony this afternoon. And then some of the other things that are funded by this HUD funding is more smaller, like single-family home projects by our community housing development organizations like Job Point and CMCA, and then also our internal housing programs.
So Matthew, Rebecca talked about the projects supported by the annual funding for HUD. What housing projects did the city do or will be doing with ARPA funding?
So of the $25.2 million of ARPA funds, about $8.6 million has went towards affordable housing programs and about $5.6 million towards services for individuals experiencing homelessness. We've partnered with the Community Land Trust to complete construction of the remaining two houses at Cullimore Cottages. And we're working to launch new programs that offer grants to income qualified homeowners for weatherization. And then we've also partnered with CHCA for the Park Avenue and the Providence Walkway projects. We've partnered with CMCA for the Providence Landing project, and then Love Columbia's construction of transitional housing units for those who are maybe experiencing homelessness or at risk of homelessness.
Okay. So Rebecca, looking at the proposed fiscal year 25 budget, what new initiatives will the department be utilizing to further address community housing needs?
Yeah, so one of the big initiatives with fiscal year 2025 is the proposal of an affordable housing trust fund. This is going to be established through the use of general fund excess reserves with $1.5 million being appropriated for fiscal year 2025. Staff is going to be working on developing a plan for the long-term sustainability of the fund. The really exciting thing about the prospect of having a dedicated revenue source outside of the federal funding that we discussed earlier is that it will provide the city with the flexibility that it needs to address the critical housing needs of the community. We'll be working with our community partners to develop a framework for the fund and for the expenditure priorities. I think an important tool that's going to inform this is the countywide housing study that's currently being conducted and is expected to wrap up early this fall. Our hope is that this is going to provide us with really data-supported solutions to address housing needs. The county and the city will be hosting a housing summit on October 24th, which will be an opportunity for our community members to come together and have a discussion about what the next steps in addressing those needs are going to be.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Yeah, thank you.
Now I'd like to introduce Deputy City Manager Matt Unrein. Matt, can you please join us?
Absolutely.
So, Matt, the city is working on a creation of an office to help prevent and address community violence. Tell us a little bit about this new office.
Sure. This new initiative is going to be folded into the city manager's office, so it'll be part of our group. It's going to be designed to help coordinate the efforts that are already going on in our community with our different nonprofit partners to address violence and then find opportunities and fill in gaps. In addition, the new office will take the lead in coordination between police, fire, and health. And so, in short, the goal is to expand the reach of those many groups that are already doing great things in our community.
Okay, thank you. So can you talk to us about the funding for this new office?
Sure. The new office has a completely separate funding. It's not going to take any money away from police or any other city department. So in addition, we have set aside $500,000 in fiscal year 25 for grants to assist those local nonprofits who are out there in the neighborhoods already doing good stuff.
So what are some of the initial steps to developing this type of initiative?
So the way we started is we looked at joining the National Institute for Criminal Justice Reform. They're a nonprofit group who's composed of other cities and counties like us who wanted to establish an Office of Violence Prevention. So we're learning from those many examples on how best to get ourselves started. So what we learned is we're going to start with a strategic planning process. Having a plan like that will help us to ensure that we're meeting a standard of health and safety in our community, and it gives us an opportunity to craft the plan while making time to discuss them, the many different opportunities with those other community partners, those nonprofits.
So it's about collaboration. It's about pulling us together to make sure that we're all moving in the same direction.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you for walking us through this process. So continuing to discuss public safety, I'd like to ask Police Chief Jill Schlute to join us. So public safety is and has always been one of the top priorities for our residents. When we look at the budget, over half our general fund expenditures are dedicated to public safety. Funding for the police department specifically is a big topic in our community. Matthew, talk to us about the budget for the police department.
Yeah, so in total for fiscal year 25, about $68 million or 51% of the general fund budget will go towards public safety. Of that $68 million, $33 million or 25% of the general fund will be allocated to CPD.
So, Chief, a push for a fully staffed department is a huge goal for the department and the community. Tell us about where we are with our current staffing levels and how we're trying to move the needle.
Sure. So I think an important thing for people to know is that personnel expenses make up about 82.5% of our budget at the police department. That's a little over $27 million. So once you take out things like utilities and other things that we have to pay, we do like to have electricity over at the police department. So we actually operate the department on about $2.8 million or 8.25% of our total budget. And I think we're pretty responsible with that money. Today, the department sits at 30 vacancies. We have 28 officer vacancies and 2 sergeant vacancies out of a total 192 sworn positions. So our authorized strength is 192, and that is from the chief on down to patrol officers. So that includes everyone who's sworn. We're sit today at about a 15.5% vacancy rate. Ideally, we'd like to fill all of our positions, obviously. Historically, we hover around an 8 to 10% vacancy rate when you factor in, you know, retirements, people that leave police work, people that just not a good fit for them. That's pretty much normally where we sit, which would be about 15 to 20 vacancies at our current authorized strength. So we've got some room to move the needle. I'm really proud of the work of our training and recruiting team. Earlier this year, I asked to get another training and recruiting officer. That's actually a member of professional staff. It's not a sworn person. In this case, we hired somebody back who'd retired from the police department, and he's been extremely helpful. But that team as a whole has really worked hard to get more recruits in the door. And I'm actually really, really excited because next week we're actually going to see four more final applicants. So I'll meet with four people next week to offer them a job and have their final meeting with me. So that's the kind of moves that we're making. We're digging out of the hole, I think, at a pretty good pace.
So even though you've only been chief for about 6 months, you've already implemented some changes to the department. Chief, can you tell us about the changes that you made and how they will have a positive impact on Columbia?
So really early on, one of the things that we talked about was some restructuring of the bureaus of the police department. We have four bureaus now, and the new one that I asked for and received permission to create was the Professional Standards Bureau. So the Professional Standards Bureau contains our Internal Affairs Division, our Training and Recruiting Division, our Policy and Research Specialist, and then our Communications folks, which is our Public Information Specialist, and we have a uniformed police officer in that office as well, who's our Public Information Officer. I think one of the biggest reasons we need to put all these pieces together is because although when you look at that list, you might ask yourself, what do those things have to do with one another? They all have to work together to make things flow efficiently in the department. So we have to have good policies, good communications, good training and recruiting, and we have to have a good internal affairs process in order for the department to work efficiently and effectively. And so part of this was a real deep dive into what our recruitment process actually is. And so we've spent a lot of time working with HR. Big thanks to those folks over working for Kathy Baker, because we took some time to look at how we could improve the process, streamline it, make it more modern, make it easier for people who were coming in outside the city to apply for a job. A great example of that is now you can actually take the test as a police officer online from anywhere in the world. You used to have to physically come down to HR and get a testing packet and be in possession of that packet for so many days and then come back to the city and take the test. And so that's just one small example of some of the things we've tried to do to streamline the process. We also added a command-level liaison to the Citizens Police Review Board. So Assistant Chief Paul Dickinson currently fills that role, and he actually served in that capacity prior as the Internal Affairs Commander several years ago, so he's very familiar with how the board works. We also have a dedicated member of professional staff, or what some people call a civilian, who works on our CALEA accreditation goal. And I'm really hopeful that that will move that initiative forward and we will get that completed in a timely manner. And then the last thing I would say is having our public information folks in that division really increases our social media presence. There's a lot more communication about things we can get out on social media, as well as being able to tell the officers internally about outreach event opportunities and get them connected with people in the community so we can be more present and make more connections.
Thank you, Chief. So the police department has also rolled out a new program called the Homeless Outreach Team. This team has designated officers who's focused on connecting individuals experiencing homelessness with resources that we have in our community. Can you tell us how these officers are having an impact on our homeless population?
So I think so this idea was kind of born out of a unit that the Houston Police Department has. They actually have the same name, so it was totally stolen, I admit that. It's actually an award-winning concept at Houston PD, and so ours is modeled off of their unit. And so the real goal is for these officers to become familiar with our homeless population and the specific challenges and stories of those folks so they can better really link them up with the services and help that they need. One of the key elements of this is learning to build trust over time, right? So when you are dealing with the same folks day in and day out, it's a lot easier to build that trust rather than sometimes you might see a different officer every day. And so this way, the homeless outreach team officers, they know a lot of these folks. They know the various challenges some of them have, and really they have the best opportunity to connect them with services that they need or address behavior in the most appropriate way. They're also really familiar with our community resources. So we have a lot of resources in Columbia, and sometimes it's hard to keep them all straight. So I know Stephanie's going to talk a little bit about the Divert program, which is great, but that's a huge way we've started connecting people with resources. We do make arrests. So if you get a ticket or you get arrested and you're experiencing homelessness, Judge Nose actually set up a community support docket. So that's just kind of another layer of, even though if you're arrested, we have a way to go in and try to connect you with services at that connection point, not just necessarily maybe a daily interaction in the field, but sometimes arrest is the best choice for the officers there, and so they have another opportunity to get connected with services when they go to court and see Judge Nose. And then finally, just those officers working with these various community support organizations provides a resource both to the homeless folks and our police officers. So we have police officers working in beats all over the city. And as the city's grown and expanded, we've seen this issue pop up really in every corner of the city in varying degrees. And so daily, the patrol officers may not always have the best idea or the best idea of the resources, which we're working on through the Divert program. But when we have our homeless outreach team folks come and partner with our patrol folks, they're able to help them understand some of the best ways to help that population, and in some ways kind of a mini trainer, if you will. And they have a lot of knowledge. In fact, our folks that are in that team right now, one of them is a 20-plus year veteran, and the other one is probably about 15 years. So we're talking about folks that have been in police work for a while, and they're really in a good position, I think, to influence our younger officers and educate them on how best to help deal with these issues.
All about making connections. Thank you, Chief. So looking at the different initiatives that the city has, it becomes clear that there's an overlap between several of our priorities. That is especially true for public safety and public health and human services. So I'd like to ask Stephanie Browning, Director of Columbia Boone County Public Health Department, to join us. Hey, Stephanie. So Stephanie, we've seen an increased demand as a city for public health and social services for the past several years. Can you tell us how the health department gauges these needs and crafts our budget?
Sure. You're really right about the increase in demand. 4 years ago, we were in the start of a pandemic, right? And we certainly learned a lot at that time. And one of the lessons we learned is that the bench wasn't very deep. And so we needed to do some internal work to kind of increase our capacity to provide a better service. So I will say that over the last 4 years, we've been very fortunate to have support from the City Council and City Manager's Office with budget. The Boone County Commission pays a third of our public health budget, mm-hmm. So they've been very supportive of the department. And we've seen just a growth in new grants and things. So we've really been able to sort of increase our capacity to give the kind of service that we want the residents to have. But you did ask about how we draft a budget, and I've been doing this a fair amount of time. So I think the things that we commonly look at in our department, we're always looking at the health data. What are the trends? What's happening in the community? What's happening with the economy? Any of those factors and variables, because they all play into health. So is there an emerging issue out there? More important, what is happening, like who's being impacted by this trend? We know that people don't have the same health opportunities to have great health outcomes. And so we want to look at who's most impacted and are their needs being met or are there gaps? And then we start to figure out how do we fill those gaps. We also spend a lot of time out in the community because it's important. You get the best information when you're listening to your residents, right? And then, of course, every 5 years, we do a big community health assessment. We work with all of our partners in the community. We just released that a couple months ago. And so now we're working on a community health improvement plan to address those most important needs, and that'll help to shape future budgets. So we sort of just put those all together and get a budget.
All right. So knowing that we've seen an increase in demand, tell us how the city social services program is for 2025.
Sure. I think that most people are not all that familiar with our social services funding process. It's one of the very unique things in Columbia. It's unique in general for a city our size, and definitely very unique in Missouri. As far as I can tell, the city council started putting funding to community-based organizations back in 1976. So it's been a long time. They did that because they knew that there were needs of vulnerable residents that the city could not and maybe should not be meeting, right? Because we're not equipped to do everything for everyone. There are others who do a really good job at it, and so we should support them. So over time, that process has just really grown and evolved. We issue an RFP every year in July. It's either going out this week or just came out. And organizations can apply for funding. We focus on a couple of areas. We focus on basic needs as one category, and then in an alternate year, we focus on opportunity. Basic needs is exactly what you think it is. It's, you know, food, shelter, the essentials of life. And then opportunity are the things that help you to get ahead. That could be job training, career development, after-school programming, lots of things like that. We have a wonderful human services commission that is appointed by the city council. And so these are fellow citizens in Columbia that have agreed to come together and analyze those proposals. They will go through them fine-tooth comb, and they will come back to council with recommendations on how we should spend that money. Our job in the department is to sort of manage that whole process, make sure those contracts go out, and make sure that we follow the reporting. So we want to make sure that if we're spending city resources, what they said they were going to do, they're doing, and the outcomes are the ones that we're hoping to achieve.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I say also for fiscal year 25, we've increased social services funding by about 3.2%. That sort of equates to the inflation rate. And this will help us keep up with those funding needs. This will bring the total investment for social services to about $1.9 million.
Yeah, and I didn't mention this earlier, but again, you know, we talk about collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. So our human services staff works with Boone County Community Services Department and United Way, and they meet on a regular basis, and they meet to coordinate because they're all doing issuing funding as well. So we want to make sure that we're not duplicating services, that we're working in lockstep. And one of the things that they've learned over the years is for every dollar that we invest in our social service agencies, there's an $8. Those agencies are bringing in an additional $8. So it's a really good return on investment.
That's impressive to say that for a city our size. We've been supporting social services for close to 50 years.
Yeah.
So Chief Lee already told us a little bit about what the police department is doing to address homelessness. Mm-hmm. Can you discuss the approach from the Health and Human Services side?
Sure. We have really focused for a lot of years on trying to coordinate organizations around this issue. It's Steve Hollis, who's our human services manager, that's been a passion area for him for a long time. And so in this budget, we're really going to continue to support what's previously been started. In FY23, the city purchased the Ashley Street, what we call the Ashley Street facility. It used to be the VFW. It's behind the power plant, and made some investment in improvements to the facility so that it could be operating as an overnight shelter facility. We have Room at the Inn, which is a local organization that had been every year providing overnight services in the winter months and rotating around from church to church. And that's a hard thing, right, to pick up and move every month or so.
We saw that especially hard during COVID.
It was really hard during COVID. And so anyway, the city wanted to make sure that we had those services, but we wanted them on a year-round basis. So they increased the funding. So we have $450,000 going to Room at the Inn to do shelter services year-round. And they're doing it out at the Ashley Street facility, which we've provided. So that's working well. We also funded Turning Point, which is a day center. That over at Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church, we were able to increase their funding to increase their hours and the number of days they operate. But the most important thing is they took over the operations of an overnight emergency warming center when the temperatures drop below 25 degrees. And, you know, when it gets that cold, it's life-threatening. And so Ratty might be full, There may be people that can't go for various reasons. We have a safe place that people can go. So that's another one that we're continuing. For the last couple of years, we've contracted with For a Change, which is for street outreach services to work with this population. And then also, not quite related, but I think complementary. The city does, we've had a utility assistance program for a long time. It was previously $300,000. It got increased to $600,000, last year, and we'll continue that going. It's important when there's a lot of things that keep people in their homes, right? It doesn't take a lot to put someone over the edge and to and perhaps have them out in the street. And this is one of the things we can do to alleviate some of the burden with what's going on.
Thank you. So Chief Schlute mentioned public health, human services, working closely with public safety and a municipal court to roll out a new program called Divert. Can you talk to us about the Divert program?
I can. We did a press briefing in May on the Divert program, so that was a little bit more extensive than what I'm going to talk about today. But basically what we're doing is integrating social services support into the city's public safety and justice systems. And we have two major goals. One is to reduce the burden of health and human services issues on our public safety departments and the court. A lot of times I think Jill really alluded to seeing people over and over again, and if we can start to connect them into some resources, maybe that number goes down and that changes. But the most important reason, of course, we want to improve the outcomes for our residents that are impacted. Again, and I know Jill talked about this, but you know, sometimes they're seeing folks that they've got some life stressors going on. Maybe they've got some substance use issues. Other things are unsheltered. So if we can do something to connect them to resources, that's where we're aiming. We started the program. I think it's kind of cool how the program started. Jill mentioned municipal court judge knows. And he's kind of the champion of this. He did start that docket, that community support docket. And I think it was FY23, he had a position that he wasn't going to fill, and he was willing to give it up so that we could hire a social services specialist to help him with the docket. And so that's sort of how the program started. And our employee is downtown working with the judge, the prosecutor, and really the goal the ultimate goal is to get that case dismissed, right? To have certain benchmarks and things happening that person is out of that justice system issue for now. But what she's done, what this employee has done, is she is now starting to build more relationships with our other public safety departments. And so they've set up a process where somebody can be out in the community. An officer, let's say, is out there and dealing with someone that he's like, ooh, they would benefit from some help from Divert. And they can make a referral from the field, and she'll have it in the next day or in the day or whenever it comes in, she's able to go and follow up on that. And so it's really all about connecting people to resources. It's about keeping people out of the justice system. It's about having a better outcome for everyone.
Thank you.
And since demand for the program has been so great, we're looking at adding an additional $100,000 to help support the effort and bring a second person in to help with the Divert program.
Thank you. So, Matthew, in closing, is there anything you'd like to say final about our proposed budget?
So, people drive our budget, and we're a service-driven entity, and it is our duty to make sure that our revenues and our expenditures meet the basic needs of the citizenry and of what we here at the city need to do. And so I think that would.
Thank you.
That wraps it up.
So I know this has been a different approach. Our hope is that through our discussion today, you're able to see how the city's implementing its budget priorities. I encourage each of you to be involved in our process. Listed on the screen behind us are highlights several opportunities for community members to engage during our budget process. Another date to keep in mind is Tuesday, August 6th. Voters will have an opportunity to vote on an extension of the capital improvement sales tax. Many of the capital projects that were mentioned today are funded in part by the capital improvement sales tax. If approved, it will allow us to continue funding these type of projects over the next 10 years. In closing, I want to thank the city staff that works hard to provide the level of service our citizens require. I want to thank the budget team who've worked many hours to put together our budget document. I want to thank the city council who over the next 2 months will discuss, review, and pass our budget. And I want to thank you, our citizens. You allow us to do the work that we do. Thank you for attending this budget presentation, and please stay engaged.